here's to 10 years of discovering what the Super Fair is and another 10 years of discovering ourselves even more. Cheers.
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 Clink.
Clink. My name is Alex Mito, one of the founders of Super Fair, formerly known as Super Fine Art Fair.
I'm James Milley, and I am the co-founder of the Super Fair. I am also a fine art portrait photographer.
Hi, I'm Sharon Halevi. I am the lead curator and designer operations manager of the Super Fair. I love talking about art with the two of you, right? As a fellow collector and as an artist myself. And so it always makes me wonder, how did Super Fair, once upon a time Super Fine, come to be?
I always answer this question. I'm not going to. James, you're going to answer it.
You know, yeah, I would say that we were wanting to make an art world that was more approachable, both for the collector side and also the artist side. You might go somewhere ready to spend money on something, and just because you're not in a suit, you're not older, it might just mean that you're looked at as some random person on the street instead of a capital C art collector. At the time that we started the Super Fair, we were doing a lot of different things in New York. We were producing pop-up shows. We started to get into art collecting at that time. I remember the first artwork that we bought was a spoof on Marty McFly by Hanksy. Kind of like illustrative style print of a fly wearing a puffer vest with
sneakers. Oh my God.
Yeah, and sneakers on each of the fly's legs. And it had Marty McFly's face on the fly. It was something.
Love.
So yeah, that was, but it, and it was just at this pop-up that had like a skate rink in it, like a skate ramp in it. That kind of really gave us the bug, no pun intended.
I'm so glad you brought up that specific instance, James, because I haven't thought about it in years, but like,
I know.
I really haven't. But now when you brought it up and spoke about it, like, I can remember every element of the room. I can see the print in my mind. The artist Hanksy was anonymous at the time, right? Later, they found out who he was, and he was a restaurant owner in the Lower East Side. And I was a restaurant owner in the Lower East Side. And I was a restaurant owner in Florida before that and have been for like as long as I've been alive. So, you know, I grew up in that business. And there was something about, so this show, like the way James is describing it is exactly how it was. There was a skate ramp inside. There was music blaring. There might've been a band playing. I don't remember. People were having a good time and the art was selling. That was really critical as a difference from other things we had been to, especially openings, was the art was flying off the walls. They had cashiers there. They had red dots out the wazoo. I think we spent like $350 on our print or something in that range, which was like a lot for us, but also like we could see it was like a real legit thing that we were buying. There were originals too, and I think they were sold out already, and they were like in the $1,000 to $2,000 range. And so we saw that, and the contrast I'm drawing there is like we were also going to art shows and meeting art world people who kind of like their whole thing was how do we get this more exclusive? How do we like bring more prestige? And in the process, they were all broke too. And we're like, okay, you're broke, but you want richer people and you want to create some level of prestige, this idea of like what's called a vellum good. Like the more we hold it away from people, the more they want it. And as a human being, that was like, what the hell is this? Especially coming from hospitality. You're like, that's the opposite of hospitality. Whether it's like a high-end restaurant or a fast food joint, if it's run by someone who knows that business, they know that the critical element is making people feel good. And that was just not part of the art world. I'm like, full stop. It was not about making people feel good and enjoy the experience. So we went to this show like 2014 or 15, and we were like, oh, this is really cool. And that kind of spark kind of really stuck with us with everything, every decision. Now that I think about it, every decision we made with Superfair from there.
So it's interesting because I think that the art world in general is really starting to catch on. I remember a few years ago, there was an artsy article that explained having a buy now button, for instance, on a website instead of an inquire button, like hugely increases the odds of someone buying. If there is a price and there is a buy now button and you can decide, okay, this is in my budget, I'm going to buy it. With an inquire button, you have to start a conversation where the owner might not even care to continue the conversation with you. And it might not even be if you can afford it. It's also when they're looking at who buys that artist's work. Sometimes they only want someone who has some kind of status to be purchasing the art to continue right. to elevate that artist in that way. And so as far as selling work to people who can afford it and who like it and they want to have it in their homes, that's something that the art world is starting to catch on with. But that was something that we were doing 10 years before yep. that even caught on, was making art approachable for anyone to buy.
Yeah.
Like James is saying, like the transparency of having prices listed, having a buy now button online. Again, mm-hmm. back to the Hanksy show, that was a thing. They had cashiers there. Oh, this is a place we buy. A lot of people go into art galleries and don't actually understand that that's a place you buy art. They think this is like a viewing, like in their experience, it's like a museum or a gallery. It's the same thing. There's art on the walls. It's somewhere, you know, it's there to look at. They don't even think of the concept of buying. So back to that idea of like the transparency and pricing, which again, we've always had. I think that just like, again, it seems so obvious. You're selling it, tell them how much it is. But I think that one of the reasons that was obfuscated, like hidden in the art world, was the reason James said, you want to sell it to a specific person. You want this person to add it to their collection so that you can, you know, claim you have them. And I like on a human level, just don't support that. So we've never really made that part of our fair. Of course, someone's a big collector and they show up and they buy something. Sure, it's an honor. They've chosen your work among many, but also like a person who doesn't collect and loves your work and wants to bring it into their home, it might be their first piece. It's also an honor. And that's something we say across the board to artists. We never put up a facade of like, oh, we're here to like bring the prestige of art buying. It's really just to connect you with people who fall in love with your work.
Did you find that there were a lot of obstacles early on in terms of building it with this concept because it was such a newer concept? And then also in comparison, not just obstacles, but then what were the big wins that you were experiencing early on?
We do have a folder on our Google Drive called Lame Ass Responses, which was from everything from sponsors to clients we pitched to venues to anybody who just totally shut us down and was like, you don't know what you're doing, your kids or whatever. You know, we just put them in the lame ass responses folder. And like, it's funny, but I think there's actually like a psychological and business takeaway to that is like, you can't let the tail wag the dog as an entrepreneur, as a business, as an artist, as anybody. You can't let the worst thing someone tells you about yourself and what you do whip you into another spot. You have to stay centered. It's not easy, but one of the ways you do it is you classify those things. You go, okay, this is a lame ass response. This is not someone who understands me, wants to work with me, wants to guide me, like, you know, has a valid concern. This is just a lame ass response. And you put it off and you say, that's not part of my guiding force. So the lame ass responses folder helped, I think, us to like sequester those into a place and be like, okay, cool. They exist. They're there, you know, and we just keep going with what we're doing and like, you know, think about whose advice we're going to take, think about whose feedback we're going to absorb and move forward. You go out with your idea, you hope it works, you do your best, and sometimes it doesn't. So when I talk about failing upwards, our first show was a failure. Boom, 2015, Miami. It was a failure. Financially, it was a pain in the ass. It was terrible, whatever. It was also really cool. It was really, really, really cool. People come up to me to this day and are like, that was my favorite. That was so cool. I loved it. It's like the Velvet Underground's first album. It sold 3,000 copies, but everyone who bought it started an influential rock band. Like, it was one of the most influential pieces of music. I think our first fair was in a derelict 60,000 square foot gutted building in Miami, no AC in Miami. We were counting on cool weather. We got an El Nino or La Nina or whatever one is hot and rainy. And it just
whatever one floods.
We did. I have a barking dog. One second.
You know, I think that going back to your question, Sharon, like, what was the first big win? Literally, less convention center old venues. When you're not only limited to deciding between convention centers, that means that you. I mean, where are convention centers usually? They're usually at the edge of a city. In New York, they're along the piers, or they're all the way south. Miami, it's like you have the convention center, but then besides that, there's nowhere else to go. And so when you're not limited to those convention centers, you can be a lot more central. And so I think our biggest win at the beginning was when we went from this kind of more underground vibe in Little River, and then we were in right. the CrossFit gym, which was very central, but it was still kind of funky. And then we ended up, I would say, in New York when we were in the packing district and Soho. When we ended up being right in the heart of everything, there's not many art fairs out there who are in the center of the action, and having music playing, having like warmer lights and multicolored walls instead of only white walls, these types of things where it didn't cheapen the art, it didn't distract from the art, it made it feel more like, hey, this art is in the setting that it belongs ultimately, which is in a home. And so having super fine feel like a home setting instead of a museum or a gallery really differentiated it, but we were finally able to show the world, hey, look, we're in the middle of everything. And I think that was when it had its shift to where more people were taking it seriously.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I always say, like, it between. So we started this in 2015, in August 2015, and there's like a super duper deep origin story, which was like, we were like, you know, I had this little tiny office in WeWork. We would work back to back in there. We were pitching corporate sponsors. We were trying to get all these big like galleries and designers and stuff involved. And like, it was a whole nother animal. We had different people on the team. We brought in like A-list musicians to play at the fair. Like, the guys from Vampire Weekend played our first show. Like, we did a lot, like our first time, that was not, it was in the direction, in the service of like a unique, different, unconventional art fair. But we've pared back some of those things and focused in and really become about the artist to buyer connection, which was always there and present, but it was one of many elements. We were doing all this just like back to back in a tiny glass office in WeWork. We would go down, like, there was a Japanese market. We'd go down there. We'd get like two kombucha, like different flavors each time. We get like the little Japanese triple sandwiches, like, and we'd eat those. We'd drink the kombucha. We'd get like high on kombucha. We'd be like, oh my God, what if we had this? And what if we had that? What if we had this? And then we'd go down and get two more kombuchas, come back, be high again from the kombucha. And that's how we started. It was like in New York, planning a show in Miami. We had been given this massive space by these developers who were like, do something with it. We're like, okay. So we're in New York plotting it. Then we got to a point where we're like, we need to go down there because like nothing's getting done. So we went to Miami a month early, basically moved in, like went to work every day, building up this first show. We DIY'd our own VIP packages. We also got high doing that from spray paint.
Hundreds of wooden little spiky emblem circle things that had
badges
stenciled. And I'm not a painter. I'm not a mural artist or anything. I'm a photographer. So I didn't know you're supposed to wear a face mask.
You are.
No.
I was blowing teal out of my nose.
Teal and yellow. Yeah. It was ridiculous. I mean, like, these things, I still have one. I mean, it was ridiculous. We sent these out to, like, all of our VIP guests. We, like, made them ourselves. It was wild. And, like, that's what I said. That first show, financially, nightmare. In terms of, like, cool factor, like, off the chart. Like, it was really cool. If I want to find the video, it was a really cool show. But here's the clincher, right? So we built this thing in New York, like, from our WeWork. We went down to Miami. We, like, spray painted stuff. We marshaled, like, crazy cool artists in that show. We had, like, all the, it's like peak street art, like 2015. We had all the street artists from all over the world, from Denmark, LA, everywhere, doing huge murals in the back of the building. I mean, we had a lot of, like, heavy resources in this show. And then it didn't work financially. It just didn't work. We got, you know, 1,500 people showed up. They loved it. Nobody, you know, we didn't make any money. No one made any money. It was just like a thing. We had a fun show. Then we went back to the drawing board. That's the important part. If you're listening, you're an entrepreneur, you're an artist, whatever. It's not the try and the fail. That's always going to happen. If you try and you don't fail, you just go right to the top. I mean, that's like a one in a billion. That doesn't usually happen. There's a try and a fail. What matters is that you go back to the drawing board. And we did. And we moved to Miami. This is where we really built the business up. We moved to Miami, got an apartment, got an office, got a whiteboard, got an employee. And we sat down and we sat in that office and we wrote stuff on the whiteboard until the business model made sense, until our value proposition made sense, until we knew what we were doing and who we were doing it for. It became about price transparency. It became about artist to buyer direct connection. We found our niche. We found who we are. And that identity is what carries us through. And, like, we've had close to 40 shows. I'd say 35 of them have been very strong. 5 have been underperforming. But we bat a really good average. And it's really just sticking to those ideals, sticking to what we are, sticking to who we are. And, you know, but that's my, like, if there's a takeaway here, it's like, try, fail, get back to the drawing board with the lessons. And don't let it keep you down. I don't care if you're in debt right now. Like, just, like, let that settle, sit down, write it out, and go back. And that's really what propelled us forward. It's allowed us to do these 40 shows to help this many artists connect to buyers, and this many people end up with cool art on their walls they didn't know they could get. And, like, yeah, but had we just done the one show, we would have been like, well, all right, you know,
yeah,
let's be accountants.
Sure. Because artists should be accountants. I mean, you have to have mm-hmm. that in a little bit, but
hire a good accountant.
Yeah, hire a good accountant. Well, I guess, you know, all of this talk about knowing who you are, it does make me ask the question of where did the name Superfine come from? And then I want to also address why we're rebranding and becoming Superfair. So yeah, where did the idea of Superfine ! Come from?
I will say having the name Superfine was maybe our biggest obstacle from the beginning was people seeing this and the exclamation point and thinking, oh, you're fun, you're a party or something like that, when that was not the case. Huh. You know, at the beginning, the most important thing to us was to make it clear that we were different. And most other art fairs out there, a lot of arts organizations, they were kind of these obscure one-syllable words that you kind of know the definition of, but you're like, okay, I already feel excluded from this name. Mm-hmm. But I think that having that fun name with the exclamation point, making that a big part of our brand, and then showing, hey, you thought you knew what Superfine ! Meant. This is what it means. And having that association with the name Superfine becoming something that could be fun and elevated. It could be masterful and approachable. And so that's kind of what Superfine became. But from the beginning, that was the goal, and it took some fighting and you know, ignoring those mean remarks to get to where we are now.
Yeah, we are experts talking about lame-ass responses. We're experts at receiving the backhanded compliment. I've gotten many of them. You guys are so cute. You guys are so fun.
You guys are really good at marketing.
And it's like there's always like a little bit of like a marketing. And like, yeah, so we got a lot of those at the beginning. And it is like, you know, it is hard to just file those away and to not let the tail wag the dog, right? Like it's hard. It's not easy. You will wonder if you're doing something wrong. You will stop. You will consider what that person said to you. You will talk about it. You will bitch about it. Like you will, but it's over time you kind of stop. Like it kind of just, it's like the filing away of it is what helps. And but the name like super fine kind of, I don't know if we were like a little bit masochistic at the time and we just wanted the pain, but we set ourselves up. We chose something that we felt was fun, approachable, recognizable, that could really be a brand. And we really stuck to that as part of our identity. And like, even now as we evolve into a new identity and a new name, we kind of keep that as part of it. Like we, you know, we are, like we were afraid to be fun. We were like, we don't want to be fun. Mm-hmm. We are fun, but now we're like embracing. We're like, no, this is fun. Coming to look at art and buy art is fun.
For me, I think what it means is the word association with fair versus fine. With super fine, it was making fine art fun. But if you're taking the phrase fine art fair, I think that the word fair is the one that relates to us the most because we put the artist first. It's all about making it fair for the artist. A fair is something that, yes, we in the art world, we know an art fair as usually this interior event that is with walls and it's super expensive, but to the rest of the world, a fair is a place of entertainment. It's a place to go and have like memories of when you were a kid or going on a date to a fair, you know, whatever it is, having that type of fun entertainment association with it as well. And also bringing it back to fairness, having it be where anyone who comes into the super fair, it is a place for them. It's not a fine art exclusive excluding experience. So that's, to me, that association with the word fair instead of fine is what it means to me.
Sharon, I mean, this is a good time to bring you in because here, like, what have you seen in the evolution of super fine to super fair, both as the artist coming in 5 years ago and then as a team member who's been a huge part of this rebrand and this shift? Like, what's your kind of take and perspective on it?
Yeah. Ooh, fun. So I came to super fair because James, I think you emailed me. I can't remember if it was on Instagram when you would be DM'd and then you would be like, oh, this is an opportunity, as opposed to now, I think, when you get a DM and you're like, what do you want from me? And, you know, I remember us talking in 2019 and you approaching me and being like, I looked at your Instagram and I see what you're doing. I see you're gaining followers, all of that. And you pitched me on doing a fair. And I remember talking to you about the fact that I was like, yeah, I'm not a gallery chaser. I love working on commissions, but I want that exposure. And so super fine at the time was a really exciting new opportunity. And I, you know, and then pandemic hit and the fair was moved. And the art world changed like crazy during that time, right? I was suddenly getting all of these commissions because everyone was home and they were looking at their walls and they were like, I don't want IKEA artwork anymore. I want real art and I'm not spending money. So now I have money to invest in something new, which I think for a lot of people became visual art. It felt like we were returning to this other era when people, you know, before there was technology in the way that we have it today, and people would go to look at the new painting, to have this conversation around the story of the lemon peel or the skull that's on the table next to the rose and there's blood on the thorn. And so when we finally got to do the fair, I had I sold out my booth, I think, except for one painting. And I remember halfway through the fair, I had this one 6-foot by 4-foot painting. And I was like, should I change the price? And James, you and I had a whole conversation about it. Were you like, I mean, if you want, but it seems like it's at a good price point, in particular because you're not sharing your profit with someone else. And then literally that afternoon, I sold the painting. And I actually, this is so wild, she emailed me last week to just send me a photo of the painting in her new apartment. So that was magical. And, you know, as I continued on with Superfair, I really fell in love with the way you were able to connect with the audience in such a specific way. So last year, when we all had the conversation about originally for me to join the sales team, and the more that we talked, we were like, oh, I feel like I should just be part of the Superfair team in general. I got really excited about how can we look at this company and really start to drive, not just for the audience, breaking down the fears and the barriers around buying art, but also helping artists break down those fears and barriers of what does it mean to be an accessible artist. And I feel that we are doing a lot of work now of not just curating the fairs even more and really figuring out, oh, why should these two artists be next to each other? What is it like for an audience member to walk through the fair and see like the juxtaposition of this abstract work next to this photography work? But also offering so much more individual care for the artists, like helping them learn how to talk about their art is so huge. And I think has been making a really big difference in our fairs. Yeah, and I think this all came out of pandemic, where people were in this state of really craving communication and contact and to have things that are in their environment that really shift and affect them.
We keep kind of circling around this concept of then and now, right? Then and now with the pandemic, then and now with the start of Superfine. And something that was not the case 10 years ago is artists did not have a ton of opportunities to be the one in charge. And it used to be where, I mean, really galleries were kind of the only option for artists because you made the art, but you didn't have a place to show it. And now the world has changed massively to where social media and just the ease of people having their own websites means that you as the artist, like all of those elements that only a gallery could offer before, such as marketing your work to a group of people, developing those relationships and selling it, there wasn't even the option before. Galleries are now a tool. They're a tool that you can choose to use. Same with Superfine, Superfair. It is a tool that you have the option to use as a form of getting more buyers, of furthering your art career the way that you want.
When you think of an art fair or you think of a gallery show or you think of anything, just ask, I'm already putting this much force, effort into my work and my career, into growing it, right? Is this thing I'm doing multiplying that force? If it is, it's probably a good move. If you look at our shows and you're like, I'm just going to choose one, I'm going to do New York and I'm going to put in my money and I want to make 3 times that money and get out of there. You know, that's not really the way to look at it, right? It's more like, okay, I currently have, you know, 20 people regularly buying my art, right? If I do their show in New York, or I do like two, I always say do like at least two. So you spread it out, you get different audiences, you spread your risk a little bit. Because some of the risk is just inherent. It's just like weather, it's like other events, whatever. So spreading it out a little bit, and you say, okay, I have 20 people. It's taken me 5 years. And these are like real numbers I hear from artists, right? It's taken me 5 years to get here. I've got 20 people regularly buying my art. If I do these two shows, can I get 20 more this year, right? That's a force multiplier. That's like what you already do, increasing what you got out of the last 5 years, getting that in one, right? And I think that's what we do well. That's what other opportunities can do it too. It's not just us. There's other things out there. But really committing to it and thinking that, like, you know, like, is this going to multiply what the effort that I'm putting in? We're creating more of a full experience that audience react to, and also brands and sponsors react to, and the kinds of brands and sponsors we're bringing in, like Cohort, which is a CRM and like a point of sale system for artists, right? That they work directly with the artists in our fairs to act also as a force multiplier for their sales in a different way, to help them streamline the actual, like, you know, bookkeeping and like inventory and selling part of their practice. And that, you know, that's a really great sponsor we've been able to bring on with it as part of our new identity. We've brought on others that are maybe not directly in the art industry, but are looking to align with artists and give them opportunities. We're keeping art at the front, but it's just more expansive. It encompasses more. It brings more under the umbrella and just makes us, you know, a more whole experience, I think, that just, it again, benefits everyone in the mix.
We're a company that is really striving to take care of what it is to be a freelancer and to honor it and respect it and highlight it. And to just kind of say, keep trying. Like, one weekend does not determine success and failure. You know, audience is going to connect to whatever art they're going to connect to. And it kind of doesn't matter if this person has been creating art for 50 years or if they've been creating art for 1 year. But if they're serious and on top of it and they understand the business of what it is to put yourself out there, right? Like, just being an introvert isn't going to work for you as an artist anymore. It's not a cute quality. It's kind of like, I get it, but also, how are you putting yourself out there? And I think it's this amazing concept of how do you become the superhero inside of your own artist's dream, and being able to be in a fair of, it's not just paintings, it's not just photography, it's not just sculpture. We offer everything, and in all its levels. I say to our artists all the time, you have to think about taking part of this fair as though it is an upscale studio visit. We're not a gallery. We're not here taking a percentage. You are here to really show who you are and why you are.
When you were talking about artist Sharone, I was going to say that, you know, that is something very reassuring about working with the Super Fair is you are not just getting this exhibition opportunity where, hey, you better be extroverted. A lot of the elements that they don't teach you when you're getting an MFA or you're just, you know, like learning how to make art wherever it is you did, whether you taught yourself or you got an education somewhere, the business side of putting yourself out there and being the one to share your work, that's something that we guide artists with along the way. And so the Super Fair also helps you become the super version of yourself. And whether you're just starting out and you really need that guidance as you're even discovering what your art career is, or you've been doing this forever, but you've never been the one putting yourself in the driver's seat, we help you drive that car, that career car. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
I liked what, you know, I liked the way you framed it, James. And I also like the way that Sharone said, like be, you know, we can help you become the superhero of your artist's dream, what is an art fair for an artist? Is it ROI? Is it return on investment per show? No, it's not. It can be. We hope it is. We pull every stop for it to be, and you pull every stop for it to be, right? But going in, that is not the way to look at it. It not just pop in money in the machine and take some out. It's just not how our industry works. It's a very, it's very emotional industry. Art is emotional. People react to it different ways. There are micro and macro factors of any exhibition that if anybody tells you that they're under their control, they are lying to you. It is not possible to control every facet. Some of it is the economy. Some of it is what politicians are saying on the TV. I don't know what they're going to be saying when this episode comes out. Things change so constantly. And micro things happen, rainstorms, and you know, you might invite 10 people to the show and they just have other plans and they can't come. So micro and macro things happen that make any time you put your work and yourself out there could be a slam dunk, one-off success, you know, and we've definitely had that. Like, you know, our booths for Nuts to Bolts, Soup to Nuts, our booths range from like $2,500 to about $5,500. You keep the revenue. And if your work is priced, you know, the way we recommend it, which is like $500 to $5,000, we've had artists come in with a booth and walk away from one weekend with $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. Some artists do that all the time. It's not a guarantee. Sometimes you make your booth value back. Sometimes you don't quite make it back, but you gain an audience, you gain their reaction to your work. And like all that's required of you doing well in Super Fair is your art being strong, well-positioned, having the meeting with Sharon, our curator. She's available to everybody to her own chagrin. She is available to everybody. And, you know, you can talk to her. And so listen, come in, you know, position and price your art correctly. Then beyond that, you bringing yourself to the fair open-mindedly, watching the artists around you. If you see Diane Portwood, one of our, you know, star artists who's also on the team, if you see her and the way she interacts, Diane is one of the most like educated, professional, smart people I know who loves to, after the art fair, go to the wilderness and climb an ice flue with her dog and live in a van. And like, she's like, she can be so introverted, but at the fair, she's so good at relating to people. You can watch her and ask her, hey, I admire what you do. You know, you have any tips for me? You know, someone like Diane or Sharon or James or anybody or me, can we can help you with that. And so if you come with an open mind, you know, as to yourself and how to present yourself, you're going to improve and have a good fair. Are you going to buy a mansion at the end? Maybe, maybe not, but you're going to improve how you present yourself. And then the next time you come around, it's going to be even stronger. That's something that I think is the super fair guarantee. That's what we do. That's what we do well. We try really hard. We really want you to be a successful artist in our fairs and continue to thrive. It only benefits us, only benefits our team. It only benefits the artists around you.
Sharon, any closing thoughts you want to share?
Yeah, I think that a great first step is your friends and your family, and then helping them see you in an elevated light, like in an art fair. And then also understand that you need help, because we all need help. Everyone needs help learning how to expand yourself and learning how to find a new audience. So taking those chances and those risks are huge. So I just say that from the place of, don't be afraid to take the risk. You are worth investing in, and it's about so much more than selling a painting. And it's about exposure. It's about honoring yourself and saying, I deserve to be here. And really, we are here to do everything we can to support you in that, if you show up also wanting that support.
Thank you. Cool.
Nice. Awesome. Woo!
All right.
Cool.
For more information on applying to the Super Fair, visit our website at thesuperfair.com. There you'll also find our full back catalog of episodes, as well as other resources to help you build your business plan. If you like what you heard, send us a message on Instagram. You can follow us at thesuperfair. Thanks for listening.